This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at dicetower.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 217.
Hey everybody, I am super excited to be doing the show this week because it's an odd-numbered episode. We have some guests on the show this week.
We've wanted for a really long time.
We have wanted to get them on the show for a really long time. It's like this weird case of missed connection with us, and so I called them. I was like, listen, this is going to happen. Anyway, hello everybody. Welcome to the Family Gamers Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Andrew, and I'm joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And guess what? I have a fact about the number 217.
You do.
I know. I always have a fact about the number of the show, except for like 2 weeks ago when I completely forgot.
Whatever.
Which is actually really unfortunate because I had an awesome fact about 215, but I digress. Anyway, 217. This is interesting. Here we go. Did you know, according to Stephen Glover, a noted 19th century historian, the earliest recorded game of association football or soccer took place on Shrove Tuesday, the day before Ash Wednesday, in Derby, England, in the year 217.
Apparently, it is a tradition, and they have been playing soccer on that day in Derby since the year 217.
I know. It's like 1,800 years. A little bit longer.
That's crazy.
You didn't believe me.
I didn't. I made you show me where you found the fact, because I was like, how? What? 217?
Anyway, let's welcome our guests, and then we'll talk about our sponsor. We have on the show this week Helena and Josh Capel. How are you guys doing tonight?
We are awesome and so excited to be here. And like you said, I really can't believe how long it's taken us to actually get to do this. We've been wanting to do this for a long time also.
Yeah. Hi, guys.
Oh, man. I am so glad that we get to hang out and talk. But before we do, we have a word from our sponsor.
Have you ever heard the term, it takes money to make money? Well, it's not the only way to make money, but it is a true statement. Income, however it looks, is like an engine. It can start slow, but as you build your resource pool, it often becomes easier to make more. If this sounds a little bit like the last time you played Wingspan or Terraforming Mars, it's because there's a lot of similarities between engine building in board games and financial engine building in real life. If you need help figuring out how to get that engine started, First Move Financial might be able to help. Head over to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to see how First Move Financial can kickstart your financial engine today. Thanks again to First Move Financial for sponsoring this episode of the Family Gamers Podcast.
All right. Well, like I said, on this week, we have Helena and Josh Capel, and we get to talk about like two board game companies, or I guess they're two imprints of the same board game company. I don't really know how it works. You know what? Helena and Josh, can you explain how does this work between Kids Table Board Gaming and Burnt Island Games? How does it all work?
I have no idea.
Well, we're one parent company, or they're
but which one is the parent?
Well, the parent actually is the one we started with, and that's KTBGU, or Kids Table Board Gaming.
But it feels like the younger company.
It there's does, also, doesn't it? Yeah, it's true.
There's two parents. There's two of and, you.
Yeah.
They're co-parents. They're co-parent companies.
They're co-parenting companies. This is adorable.
Well, we started with KTBG, and that's why I feel like that's the parent company. Those are family games. And then we moved to making strategy games for adults, and we started Burnt Island Games. So we alternate between Kickstarters between those two companies and releasing games. Yeah.
All right.
Sweet. All right. And Helena, you are a teacher in real life.
Yes, I am.
In real life.
Not this fun stuff that we do on the internet. Josh, I don't actually know what you do for real.
This is what I do for real. This is entirely what I do. So I do art and graphic design for board games, and I develop and design my own games as well. I do art and graphic design for our companies, and I also work a lot for Grand Gamers Guild. You guys know Mark Spector. I do a lot of work as well. I used to do a ton of freelance work, but now it's just those three companies that I work for, our two and Grand Gamers Guild. And I also design the occasional game and pitch them around to various publishers. So all of my work is in board gaming.
That's awesome. I'm kind of a little envious of that. I think I first saw your art in the Hot Pepper game. I can't remember the name.
Scoville.
Thank you. That was you, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you have a very characteristic art style. So I think that was the first place that I ever saw your art. So, all right. Well, like I said, from the very beginning, let's see. I think Problem Picnic was probably the first KTBG board game that we played and like reviewed and did stuff like that. And then most recently, we've been playing a ton of Food Fighters. And I'm looking forward to Fossilis coming out pretty soon. And then, of course, we're going to have to talk about your Kickstarter that's coming up with Creature Comforts.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. So much stuff. But before we really get into that and like the vision of KTBG and why you felt like you had to extend into Burned Island, let's talk about what we usually do first half of the show. And that is what we've been playing.
I don't know about you guys, but we have not been playing a whole lot because this whole like homeschooling, virtual schooling schedules still don't look the same week to week has kind of been breaking me. But we've made a little bit of time here and there. And something we finally got a chance to try with the kids was the prototype we have of Studies in Sorcery from Weird Giraffe Games.
Weird Giraffe, yeah.
Yeah, that is a fun little like resource management engine buildery game. We first played it at 2 and then we just played it tonight at 4. That's an interesting game. Have you seen it or had a chance to play it like digitally or anything?
We haven't played it, but I have seen it. I love Carla and her games. And so I really pay attention to what they're doing. So.
Live on Kickstarter right now. Go check it out.
It totally, absolutely is.
Everybody should check it out. And honestly, guys, it's $19. It is well worth it.
Yes, yeah. I agree. It is that perfect spoopy. It's scary, but it's not. Like, it's just got some of those themes. And, I mean, you're a grave robber, so I guess you have to say that it's got dark themes.
It's a little creepy, but it's mostly ridiculous because there's, like, an unstoppable bone sphere for which you need, fantastic. Like, 6 bone cards
and
a candle.
Yeah. If it's fun.
If you're in a spooky mood around now, then that's the right game for this time
of year.
I don't know what you do this time of year that could be kind of spooky. I mean, our anniversary is next week. That's spooky.
That's pretty spooky, yeah.
Yeah.
I actually find it really interesting. We had a Kickstarter campaign around this time a few years ago, and it was for Haunt the House. And it was the first time I realized how important the time of year is for themed games like this. And I think that Carla's made a really good choice about putting it on Kickstarter during this time because everybody's in that sort of spirit.
Yeah, they're thinking that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, it's a weird dynamic because it's like it's Kickstarter, so you're not going to get the game for 6 to 9 months. Yeah. But you're in that mood. Right. So it's like, do you want to get it so that you're delivering when people are in the mood to play spooky games? Or do you want to get it so that people are ordering it when they're in the mood to play spooky games? And so I kind of thought about that.
The other way around. I don't think you can take advantage of that feeling the other way around because you can't time it so that people will think, oh, I'll get this game in 11 months when it's or 10 months or whatever when it is Halloween and then I'll be interested in something spooky.
Unless you can somehow time it where you have the Kickstarter around
exactly one
this
year.
Time and then you fulfill the games also around Halloween, then you're golden.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, I almost think that the only way to make that work reliably, because there's so much variance in the manufacturing process, is to, you know, have a manufacturing process that's going to take 6 to 8 months and then artificially delay until you get to that in order to.
And you would have to, because I really, unless it's a massive game that's changed a lot while it's being formulated or whatever Kickstarter it is, unless it's a massive game. It shouldn't really take more than 8 to 9 months to deliver a game. So
that's the kind of delays we need. Artificial ones.
Well, and, you know, I mean, just from a pure business perspective, you want the transaction, right? And it's the emotions that drive the transaction. And the transaction comes at Kickstarter time, not at fulfillment time. So
yeah, absolutely.
So all of those things make sense. You know what? To my shame, I have not played Haunt the House.
Oh, all right. Well, we've got to get you a copy.
Well, that's something spooky.
Well, I guess we'll have to get an address from you after we're done here. And
We'll figure this out. Well, I'm sure we can manage this. So we've been playing Studies in Sorcery, not Degrees in Darkness. Degrees in Darkness was the old name.
Yes.
And it's what it says on the box, but it's not the name of the game. The game is Studies in Sorcery.
Yes.
Okay.
You want to repeat that a couple more times?
Head over to Kickstarter, search for Studies in Sorcery, $19. definitely worth it.
Yeah, cool. It's very cool. And I will say, I tried to explain the theme to our kids and they were put off a little bit by it. But as soon as they got into it, started playing it, they're like, oh, this is cool. I like this. I can do alchemy. I can do sorcery. Yeah, you know, I can reanimate skeletons. This is super cool. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, it's yeah, fun.
Not it's fun overly fun. Spooky.
Very good. Okay. Anything else?
I was going to let you guys go next.
Oh, all right.
Actually, we played a couple of games of Order of Invention by Breaking Games.
Great.
We played a couple games of that last night and then a couple games of it the night before. And the kids are requesting it a lot, which is really nice.
Oh, very cool.
It's really interesting to me because I feel like I have a really good handle on when things were invented because I'm kind of interested in that stuff. And it's funny watching the kids play because they have no clue. So everything they're doing really is guessing. Although our older son has some sort of idea because he's got a lot of facts, interesting facts stored up in his brain. But it's just so funny watching them because they're shocked when something that they thought might have been invented like 10 years ago was really invented in 1905.
Yes, I have definitely had those moments playing Order of Invention where it's like, oh, well, obviously like microwave ovens have only been around since the 80s, right? No, a lot longer than that.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, sometimes it's surprising like that. I worry that the game you'll learn the cards at some point. But as far as like something that you could play like several times with a group, you definitely can do it. And then that game's got to go to another group so that they can have sort of the activity of playing the game and being surprised about when things are made as well. So it's a fun experience.
I mean, maybe. Sure. I feel like there's enough card. I mean, those facts are such atomic things that are unrelated to each other that it's kind of hard to keep them all together. And, you know, what do they say, like memory sentences or whatever it is, where if you can create this method that you can remember all these things, it's an easier way for you to recall things. But like all these facts are so atomic and separated that I feel like it'd be kind of hard to actually do that. Plus, I mean, a game like Order of Invention, I feel like you're going to play it for a bit and then it's going to sit down and you're not going to touch it for 8 months and then you're going to pick it up and play it a bunch again. And I don't know. I have no idea. One of the things I love about this game, and it's remarkable because the core of the game is these facts, is that the learning is actually tangential to the primary mechanic of the game, which is gambling.
Mm-hmm. And
but I love learning in games, but I love learning in games where it's not like an educational game. Like Tesla versus Edison is a great example of a game where you learn a whole bunch of crap, but it's not fundamental to the game.
Right. And, you know, it's really interesting because teachers ask me all the time, what games should I be getting? What learning games should I be getting for my classroom? And I always say, do not buy educational games. I used air quotes there. Sorry. Do not buy educational games. Those games are awful. You can find the thing you're looking for in real, actual games.
Right. Game schooling is supplementing, not replacing.
That's right. Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So we played that. We've been sort of kind of digging through the game collection a lot lately and trying to play games that we haven't played a lot of and encouraging the kids to pick games they haven't played before when it's their turn to pick games. So we're kind of pushing through unplayed stuff on the shelves.
Slide Quest was tonight. We haven't played that in many months. That was fun.
Again,
I'll never forget my first experience with Slide Quest, which was at Dice Tower Con last year. So you're at like a nerd convention, like not just a convention with board game people, but like you're at Dice Tower Con, like this is the nerd convention. And I sat down with Slide Quest and a couple of friends, and we might have been playing it for 3 hours.
Yes, I have no doubt.
And we got to like level 20 and they're like, what is this? And why are we doing this to ourselves? Remarkably stressful. Like, you know, that those
it is.
When you watch like professionals play poker, when they go all in and they have to stand up and like walk around the table. Like, that's what we were doing in between rounds by the end of that game. We're like, all right, I just need a break. Let me just walk around the table a couple of times. All right.
Take some deep breaths.
All right. We're good to go. So.
Right.
I checked to see if they've developed any expansions to that yet, but nothing comes up. I'd be interested to get some more content for that game because it's such a fun little mechanism and it makes me think of ways to expand it and do more with it, really blossom the RPG aspect of it. I think that you could do a lot with it.
Yeah,
I really liked how you'd move through, you know, 5 or 8 or 10 or whatever of the missions. And then you have to put this guy in that hole over there, and they start to add the complexity to the game without adding complexity to the core mechanic of the game.
Right.
And then that gets kind of really interesting. And like you said, there would be a lot of really interesting ways to expand that.
Yeah. Yeah, we could have two rolling characters on the board. You could have
not even thinking about that.
Yeah, you could have like a weapon that you had to push into a specific monster, just different things that move a key into a lock, stuff like that. Like there could be different things that you could sort of have as submissions.
One thing I can tell you for sure is I really miss playing games with friends.
Oh my God.
I mean, I love my kids and I have fun playing with them, but I want my friends back.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
The game nights, it's like a huge hole in our life.
Have you been playing any digital tabletop simulator or anything like that?
So we bought Tabletop Simulator so that Anitra could play Studies in Sorcery before we got the physical copy.
With some
copy.
Friends online. Yeah.
We now both have,
Premier Board Game Arena.
Board Game Arena Premier accounts. Mm-hmm. So we can play from the same IP, all that stuff. You know, anything that we can do.
Personally, as more of an introvert, like I do miss being with my friends, but mostly I miss doing things not with my children.
Mm-hmm. There was 4 or 5 month period there where we were all four of us with each other 24 hours a day for 4.5 months. It was pretty intense.
Yeah. I have to say, I have not enjoyed showers as much as I enjoy now.
The water drowns out the children.
Yes, exactly. The shower was just a way to get clean, but it's not like that anymore. It's like 10 minutes of solitude. It's so fantastic.
We made it 4 weeks before I had to buy one of those giant outdoor playset things just to make the kids go outside. 4 weeks,
Well, and you live up in the Great White North, much like we do. So, I mean, this was early April, and I was like, no, I need something to entice them to go outside, please, outside.
Get out.
We live right across from a park, and just, you know, as things started closing down, they took down the basketball hoops. Mm-hmm. And all the
taped off all the everything,
all the playgrounds were closed, and it was like we don't have enough room in our yard to have any play anything back there. But it was what a difficult time. It's all opened up now, but what a difficult time to say to the kids, well, you need to go outside, and they're like, what are we gonna do out there? There's nothing to do.
Yeah,
you can stand.
Yeah. Then do that. Stand outside. Right.
Run around the house.
Yes.
2 laps, please.
Well, I think we did a podcast or two about board games you could play outside.
We might have. Yeah. And also ones that get you up and moving, even if you do play them inside.
Yeah. Whatever. Just go out. Yeah. But so we're in an interesting situation now where our kids are in hybrid school. So they have in-class instruction 2 days a week. I think that's enough to keep us sane.
Right.
Remains to be seen. Yeah. But we're homeschooling one child, but he is the type where if I gave him something to do and said, like, go do this, I guarantee I won't hear from him for a couple of hours. So, I can live with that just fine.
Is that your 12-year-old?
No, it's our 9-year-old.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's
so
amazing.
We're lucky there.
Both the 12-year-old and the 6-year-old are more the mom, did you see this? Mom, could you help me? Mom.
Right.
Yeah, our joke has been that our 6-year-old needs to go to school for mom and dad.
Yes. Like, yes, he does.
Our 12-year-old loves school and she's a teacher's pet. And like she's saying mom a lot because she's like, mom, I might get an A-. Mom, I need your help.
Oh, wow.
So she's very driven.
So perfectionist like dad.
Totally. That's not what I said. But our 6-year-old is just like, go somewhere.
Just like someone else needs to deal with you for a couple of hours. Please. Yeah. Anyone.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Remotely trustworthy with my child.
All right. Well, you've got a therapy session right in the middle of your podcast, everybody.
Sorry, but we've digressed into what everyone in every conversation.
Everybody is nodding very hard as they listen to the episode 217. So let's talk about another game, another kind of creepy game that we pulled out the other day. We pulled out Codenames Harry Potter.
Oh.
Have you played this version of Codenames?
No.
So
it was not what we were expecting.
Yeah, it was not. I was pretty much expecting you take out, you know, you do the code names thing. It's just got Harry Potter words. And that is not at all what's happening. It's a completely cooperative game where you are trying to find the members of the Order of the Phoenix while avoiding Death Eaters on the board. And so, I mean, I assume you've both played Codenames.
Yes. Yeah.
So in normal Codenames, you have the clue card with the red and the blue on it. And, you know, you've got your two clue givers and they're over here and they're trying to give clues. And everybody else is on the other side of the table and they're trying to guess for their teams. In Codenames Harry Potter, the card goes basically in the middle of the table and you take turns. Everybody's all on the same team. You take turns giving clues to cover
to the other people.
You have 9 Order of the Phoenix squares, and they have 9 Order of the Phoenix squares. They don't necessarily line up.
There's a couple that overlap, but you won't know which ones they are.
You won't know, because you have to get 15 out of the 18, you know, squares. So let's say Anitra and I are over here, and you guys are on the other side. Some of your red squares might be Death Eaters on our side. But as you give us clues and we guess them, when you put the Order of the Phoenix token like on top of it, then it's
we don't have to worry about it anymore.
So it's a really interesting cooperative game, and it eschews more towards the Codenames duet thing. And it just was not at all what we were expecting for Codenames Harry Potter. So that was really, really unexpected and cool. And it's hard. It's a hard game.
Right. That's surprising. I would have expected that it would just be slap the Harry Potter license and words on it, and there you go. You got Harry Potter.
And I think you could probably do that, but we should know better by now that the op doesn't just do things halfway, and they like actually do things pretty well.
Like even when they take something that's an established game and apply a theme to it, they're going to go all in on applying that theme and making the game feel a little different because of the theme that's on it.
Right. They do a great job with that.
Yeah.
And then they've got the cards or pictures on one side and words on the other side. So basically anybody can play. You don't necessarily need to be a reader to play a game like that. So that was Codenames Harry Potter. Yeah, we were really pleased with that game, I think.
I think we'll be playing more of that as we lead up to Halloween.
All right, one more.
So in keeping with trying to pay attention to what my kids want to do rather than constantly being like, hey, kids, I'm going to pick a game. Let's play, which is a real thing I have to struggle against as a board game reviewer.
Hey, kids, we really need to review this game. You need to come play it with us.
board games suck.
So I offered to our six-year-old the other day. He actually said, Mom, would you play a game with me? I'm like, sure, go ahead. Pick something out as long as it's fairly short. He's like, well, how about Connect Four, Mom? And I'm like, sure. I'll play Connect Four with you. We played it 3 times in a row, and I did not take it easy on him. And by the 3rd time, he was getting a little exasperated with me that he could not figure out how to win. In fact, like, I caught a picture of him trying to play another piece, and I was like, you can't play there. He's like, why not? I'm like, because I already won over here. The game is over. And he just gave me this exasperated look like, Mom!
So you got to win 2nd place.
2nd place, the first loser.
No, it was good, though. He wasn't, especially because it was a 2-player game, he wasn't upset. He was just kind of like, oh, what do you mean I can't win?
Connect Four is mostly just about the clatter when you release the lever at the end anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I think so.
Dumping out of all the pieces is pretty fun.
All right. So I think that's all we have on our list. Do you have anything else on your recently played list you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, we just got we haven't played it yet, but we just got the new Kalis. I got it for my birthday, and I'm really, really excited about it. But, you know, whenever are we going to play that game? Because we don't have people to play it this weekend. Okay.
Is it significantly changed from the old, boring Kalis?
Oh, no.
No, I don't think it's that boring. I 4 years ago now, I went over my friend's house.
To contact sport in our house.
I went over my friend's house and he's like, listen, we got to play Kalis because my wife will not play this game with me. I'm like, all right, that's fine, sure. It was fine. I wasn't blunt. Like, I have friends that are obsessed with Castles of Burgundy, and then I played Castles of Burgundy. And I was like, yeah, this game is fine. But in all seriousness, did they do much to change it up, or is it pretty much the same game? Just
we haven't played it yet. We've read the rules. It seems like it's fundamentally similar, and then they've addressed some systems that needed a bit of polishing and modernizing. So we're excited to take a look at it.
I have this weird thing about dry euros. I really like them.
Okay. And, so you acknowledge it's a dry euro then?
Yes. Yes, okay. I do. Right. I do acknowledge that. It's really thinky, and I like that very much about it. I happen to have a partner who also likes those kind of games, although Josh likes all kinds of games. But I feel very lucky that I have that in my life, that he'll play those kind of games with me. And we have our game group, actually, like a real hardcore game group, lives in Israel. So when they come to Canada, it has to be on our playlist when they're here. So,
yeah. And it's savage. Like, it's not dry when we're playing it.
We're bad to each other.
Yeah, that game has good room in it for, sort of brinksmanship and backstabbing. And I don't know. We take full advantage of the space the game creates for that kind of behavior.
Hey, as long as you can leave it on the cardboard, anything goes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the language. The language.
Especially for me.
Oh, I love it. That's awesome.
Planning to play that. We played Samurai recently. Reiner Knizia Samurai with the kids, and they liked it quite a bit. They were like, this is a lot simpler than it seems like it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And it really is just sort of a placing and surrounding game where you're trying to maximize groups of things that you're collecting. And they were not super good at it, but they did enjoy it enough that we'll see it again, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I really like playing games with my kids. Not that I like destroying my children at games. I don't want it to sound like that's the case, although I can't say I mind. But I like it when I play a game with my kids and they very obviously do not win. But as soon as they're done, they're like, let's do it again. Yeah, I could totally play it right now.
Play it tomorrow?
Or some other time or whatever. Yeah. Something where the kids have had enough of a good time playing a game that they didn't really care about the fact that they lost. You know what I mean? Those are the moments that I kind of really treasure. Like, that's how it was with Claire, our oldest, when she first played Wingspan. She's like, all right, this is nice. And I'm like, doesn't matter that I tripled your score. Awesome. Good. I'm glad you enjoyed yourself.
Yep. That is really special. I mean, I find when we play with our kids that the games that they're working hard to accomplish something and it's just the nature of the game to take away what they've worked so hard to do, they get so upset when they lose the game because they feel like it's not fair and they tried and they did all of these things. And, you know, I always say to my students' parents, play games with them. That's the best place for them to learn how not to succeed at something. And I really, really, truly believe that. But I find that our kids, actually our older one, has a harder time with it, letting go of the winning aspect but I worked so hard. And of course, if I worked so hard, I should be winning this game.
Let me say this. My 9-year-old, okay, I grew up playing Magic. My sister is 9 years younger than me. When she comes to visit, you know, we'll throw down some games of Magic with literally my 15-year-old decks of Magic cards. But my nine-year-old would see us play, and, you know, he came back around. He's like, Dad, can you teach me how to play Magic? I'm like, oh, boy.
Wow.
Andrew has been waiting for this since they started playing Pokemon about 2 years ago.
Waiting for it and also kind of afraid of it. Right. And you know, the very beginning of it was like, it's like, you know, the first lesson to learn how to drive a car, you don't actually get to drive the car. You just have to talk about driving a car. Right. So the first time we sat down to play Magic was me explaining, you will lose this game if you do everything right. It's just the way the game works. And so he has done a remarkably good job, as long as he's got this understanding in his head of, like, there are games like this where sometimes it's not that the other person's better than you. It's just the way the game works out. Mm-hmm. You are going to lose. And he's managed to compartmentalize it in such a way that he just does not get upset when we play Magic. And it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And it's actually spilled over into Unmatched, which is another, I mean, because there's a lot of similarities in the sense that it's a head-to-head battle game, right? Mm-hmm. And that has really helped him in dealing with loss in games, even though not all games are like this, where no matter what, you just get unlucky.
Yeah, but especially a head-to-head battling game like that, you can break past that, oh, I can't believe I lost, and start seeing like, oh, well, some of it is always going to come down to luck and getting the right cards at the right time, mm-hmm. things like that. And then you can start to develop an appreciation for what your opponent is doing and be like, oh, man, you smushed me. You did a great job. Or things like that.
Yeah, I love losing in games. Love it. I'm always, always trying to do something different. I like to sort of explore the strategic space in a game.
Let me just say that it's very rare that Josh loses a game.
That's not true.
It is definitely true. It is definitely true. So I don't know what you're talking about.
That is true, but I felt it was gauche to say so.
Oh, man, the truth comes out. All right. Well, with that, we are going to take a break. And when we come back, we have something exciting to talk about. And then we are going to talk about another exciting thing, which is Kids Save War Games.
All right.
And Burn Island Games.
Cool.
Right on.
We'll be right back.
Where does a dragon sleep? Well, on its hoard of treasure, of course. So baby dragons need to pile up loot to make their beds before they can go to sleep.
Aw, Mom, do I have to?
Tin Star Games publishes Baby Dragon Bedtime, a real-time deck building and memory game for 3 to 7 players. It's suitable for any child who is reading and plays just in 5 minutes. Mom, let's talk about the art in this game.
The art in Baby Dragon Bedtime is attractive and kid-friendly. The cards are all clearly labeled with strong color differences.
Look at the action cards. They show the dragons doing that action. And the treasures look like the ones I'd want to have in my hoard if I was a dragon.
What about the cards that subtract points?
You mean like the chewing gum and dust bunnies?
Yeah.
They look kind of gross, honestly.
They're not too bad. It's enough to say I don't want these, but they're not so gross that they're distracting from the game. So let's talk about how to play. Each player starts with a 5-card deck. All players simultaneously start flipping cards off their deck, one at a time, as fast as they can. Each time, they must do the action pictured on the card. When a player runs out of cards in their deck, they flip over their discard pile, shuffling it if they want to, and begin playing cards again. Let's talk about what the cards are that you start with.
So you take one card on the table, peek at it, and then you put it back face down.
How about flip?
That one is you flip over any card. So if it was face down, you flip it over so now it's face up. Or if it was face up, now you flip it over so it's face down. And you try to put it basically back where it was.
The other action that's in your starting deck is grab.
Which is pick up any card from the table and add it to your discard. Use grab to add treasure to your pile, or get more actions to help you or hurt your opponents.
Let's talk about what some of those additional actions are that might be in the messed up pile of cards on the table. There are things like flap,
which is discard a card from your deck.
Roar,
which is force another player to discard their top card.
And there's a couple of special cards that you can choose to use in any particular game, like Swoop,
which is force a player to swap their entire deck with you.
Crash.
Everyone must discard the top 2 cards of their deck.
And of course, the Mama card, which when played, instantly ends the game.
But I don't want to go to bed.
While you're cycling through your deck and grabbing cards off the table, try not to grab the chewing gum or the dust bunnies. Those are worth negative points at the end of the game. If you decide that your dragon has enough treasure in their hoard, place your hands over your deck. Your baby dragon has gone to sleep. Aww. A dragon asleep on its hoard can't be the target of cards such as Roar, Swoop, or Crash. Wake up!
Huh? When only one dragon is still awake, or all of the cards on the table are face up, the game ends. Everyone tallies up the positive and negative cards in their decks. Whoever has the highest value of treasure wins.
So let's talk about what we expected from this game. Baby Dragon Bedtime is unusual because it's a speed game and a memory game and a deck building game. We hoped that it would hook both our children who prefer slower memory type games and our children who like speed games but aren't really keen on memory games. The illustrations are really cute and the rules subtitle of Baby Dragon Rule Time!
Or How I Learned to Listen to My Mama.
Made me laugh. So, let's talk about what surprised us in Baby Dragon Bedtime. It's really rare to see a speed game that has press-your-luck elements to it.
Like, you can grab any card, but if you take a face-down one, it could be great, or it could be awful.
as more and more cards have been taken, you need to decide whether to keep flipping through your deck to try to add more treasure from the pile. But you're going to risk losing valuable cards if a neighbor plays a roar. I do think it's hilarious that you can literally play the mama card to end the game. And I was really happy to see that there are rules to allow for an eighth player. Wow. And also rules that slow the game down into a pure memory game for kids who can't handle the speed element.
I kind of wish it had a solo mode and maybe some more action choices.
Yeah, it can feel a little samey as you have played it a few times, especially if you play it with a lower player count of three or four players. You start seeing the same cards over and over again. So Baby Dragon Bedtime marries two of our kids' favorite types of games, speed games and memory games, and it does it in a format that feels accessible to most families. You don't even really need to be reading because there aren't that many different kinds of cards in the deck. It's quick, it's compact, and it's fun.
And if you lost this time, why not play again?
It's a little bit on the pricey side for a card game. This is because it's done by a small publisher. But nevertheless, what would we rate Baby Dragon Bedtime?
I think we would rate it 4.5 out of 5 dragon hordes.
And that's Baby Dragon Bedtime in a snap.
Aw, Mom, can't they stay up just a little later?
No, I'm playing the mama card. This review is done.
And we're back with Helena Capel and Josh Capel of Kids Table Board Gaming.
Yes, we are. And we have something exciting to announce.
We do.
Due to the amazing and incredible generosity of Helena and Josh, we get to have another giveaway on the Family Gamers podcast / thefamilygamers.com.
Hooray!
Yes. Yes. What are we giving away?
Food Fighters!
Woo! Yay! So we've been talking about this game for the last couple of weeks. We've been having a lot of fun playing Food Fighters. It is, of course, the game where you are having a food fight, but you are the food. And yeah, so we have a copy from Helena and Josh, and we are excited to give it away. So if you would like to win a copy of Food Fighters, there's lots of different ways that you can do that. We're going to use the standard widget thing that we normally use. So head over to thefamilygamers.com or go to our Facebook page at FamilyGamersAA on Facebook. It's pretty easy to find. And you will find a link to the giveaway.
Awesome.
And there's all sorts of different ways that you can, you know, get more entries into the thing and whatever. And you should check it out. It's going to be awesome. And I'm loving this game. And I know you will too.
We think it's great.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about Kid Table Board Games. So let's just start with this. Why Kids Table Board Games? Why did we start up this label?
All right. I'm gonna do this one. When our oldest son was about 2 years old, started playing some games with him. And, you know, it was all the standard games that two-year-olds can play, like chutes and ladders and, you know, the ones that want to make you poke your eye out for fun because the games are not fun. And we were gamers at that point. So we discussed, like, there's got to be a better way. There must be better games to play with our kids. There were some, but not the ones that were popular, not the ones that we thought were the games that, you know, we were going to buy for our kids and play with them. And soon after that, Josh had a game that he had designed called Shootree that I wanted him very much to send to a publisher to have evaluated. And he wasn't feeling it because it was an abstract game and he just, you know, he wasn't sure about it. And I said to him, you know what, put on a theme and see where you can go with it. And one day the theme of a food fight came about. And then we started changing the game a little bit to make it more like Food Fighters. And I said, okay, this game's ready. Let's go find a publisher for it. And as we began actually talking about what publisher would be right to publish it, I thought to myself, you know, we've spent so long on this game and our friends love it. And, you know, we can play it with our own children or a child at the time. Maybe we should.
So we did the thing that we advised you at the start of this podcast never to do.
Right. We decided to go to Kickstarter. with a game where nobody knew who we were, nobody knew what the game was, and somehow over the course of the month, we were able to, at least in Canadian dollars, yeah, so like 5 cents really, we raised, I think we raised about $29,000 Canadian, so again, like 5 cents US, and somehow we managed to make this game, which has been for us now, we're like 6 or 7 years later already, and it's still like a convention favorite. People come to our booth asking for it. And
what's the new expansion? What's the new faction? What do you got for me in the Food Fighters line now? So it's pretty cool.
And the thing that was very special and is still very special about this game is that it sort of has this emergent strategy where your kids can play just by rolling dice and saying, I'm attacking your bacon, and roll the dice, and either they get to knock that fighter out or they don't. And as you're playing, they start to realize that there are certain fighters you want in specific places that can attack your fighters. And it happens so by accident while they're playing that it's really a beautiful game. And so as we realized that this was happening with people as they're playing the game, we started thinking to ourselves, like, maybe we're onto something here.
Yeah.
And that just spawned everything else we've been doing since then.
Yeah, I guess the thesis behind Kids Table Board Gaming is that we make games that, not games for kids. That's not what we do, but we make games that kids can play. And they can play them with each other, or they can play them with adults, or adults can play them with each other as well. And it's got to, for us, all of our games have to work on all three of those pairing types. And The idea of kids being able to play them doesn't mean they're going to necessarily play them well or wisely at first, but they'll pick it up as they go, and they'll enjoy it before they know how to play it well. So that's the
right.
That's sort of the what we're looking for when we're developing, designing, selecting, like having a game pitched to us and so on. That's what Kids Table wants to do with kids.
And going back to that, you know, not wanting to play games that make me want to poke my eye out for fun, most people don't want to do that. But it really was important for us that the adults playing the game feel like they are being challenged enough to enjoy themselves, not just because they're playing with their child, but also because they like the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't necessarily have to have a strategy or even a mechanic that's inherently difficult to understand to have a game that has a certain amount of elegant strategy to it.
Right. Yeah, some tension and some interesting choices to make as an adult. Yeah. And even while your kids are just like, I'm throwing bacon at you.
Right.
Or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, maybe that's one of those things that really is bringing people back at conventions. Remember those things that it's, you know, I know how to do this. This is in my wheelhouse. I've got all this stuff memorized. I just want a little bit more. And yeah. It's right. Almost like the reason why Carcassonne has 700,000 expansions is roughly the same thing. It's like, I know the game. I just want a little bit more of the game. Give me the next thing. Give me the next thing. Yep. And when we started talking about Food Fighters, we had a bunch of people say, you know, oh, I love this expansion. Oh, I love that expansion. Oh, well, it's October. You got to get this one or that one or whatever. And it's all these different things. And certain things just kind of hit people's board gaming pleasure sensors in like different ways. And it's just really remarkable. And, you know, we have the base game and we're having a ton of fun with it. And I know you have been making custom factions with the kids.
Oh, nice. Really?
My personal favorite is steak, onion, and broccoli.
Very nice.
I would eat that.
Yeah, I know, right?
Very
so,
nice.
So, yeah, so we're having a ton of fun with it. And that's awesome because I very much understand that perspective because especially a lot of the people that listen to the show are coming from that, like, okay, I know whatever, Don't Wake Daddy and Candyland and Mousetrap, which is fun the first time you play it because after the first time you're missing pieces, so it's not fun anymore. You know, I know these games and I'm not really having fun, you know, playing these games with my kids anymore. Like, where do I go from here? And hearing that that's really what the genesis of Kids Table Board Gaming was, I guess really is not a surprise, but it's still great to hear.
As a family with multiple kids, I definitely do see what you said about your games that, you know, it's fun for an adult to play with kids or adults to play with adults, but they're simple enough that kids can pick them up and just play with other kids. Like they're quick to explain. They intuitively make sense. And it's not one of these games that my kids pull off the shelf when their friends come. And I'm like, that's, you are not ready to try that with them. They are not going to get it.
Or I stupidly got the Kickstarter Deluxe version. You cannot touch that game. Like,
or even just like, I don't want to take my time to try to explain to your friends how to play it.
Right.
Well, and on the flip side, I will say that there, now, if you have experienced this, you will 100% grok what I'm saying. If you have not experienced this, you will want to know what this fantasy world is. When you wake up and it's like 8:30 on a Saturday morning and the kids are quiet and you walk out or downstairs or whatever and they're laying on the floor quietly playing a board game with each other.
Oh, my God.
It's amazing.
It is the most magical experience of your life.
We have not experienced that yet.
It will happen someday.
I believe
it. It will
be
incredible.
I believe in it. I do.
It will
I
be like eating a butter tart.
Way to come full circle.
Thank you. Thank you. But it really is like, it's incredible. You walk out and you're like, oh, I'm going to go get some coffee.
You guys keep doing that.
No. I'm not here. I'm not even going to take a picture. Just move. Yeah, it's really great.
All right. So what about Burnt Island Games? I know that is a newer venture. Where did that come from?
Burnt Island Games came about because we got into the position where we found ourselves with a shot at getting our hands on the license for the game Endeavor. Now, Endeavor is a game from
2005. It's 15 years old. Yeah.
It's not that old. I forget when the original was made. I don't think it was that long ago.
Well, however, can we find out?
Well, we don't need to do it right now. But okay. It's a game that I did the graphic design for a while ago for Z-Man Games, and it's our game group's favorite game. Like, we've played that game hundreds of times, literally. Every time we get together, it is on the pile. It goes without saying that we're going to be playing this game when our group gets together.
It's on top of Kalis.
Right.
Wow. All
right.
Yeah. By the way, 2009.
Yeah, 2009. Yeah. So Z-Man let the contract lapse when, you know, that company changed hands a few times, and like Endeavor was one of the games that sort of fell through the cracks, and they didn't keep it going. And Helena just got it in her head as a very determined and focused person that this game will be ours. So she aggressively pursued the license with the designers, and I had already had a relationship with them from having done the art for the game. So it was kind of easy to get in touch with them, but she managed to get them to agree to take a chance on us as a publisher who had never done an adult strategy game before. And once we realized that we had this game in our grasp, it became clear that we couldn't do it through Kids Table board gaming because that's not what Kids Table does, and Endeavor doesn't fit into that brand. So we developed a new brand, which we called Burnt Island Games, and we had been looking for a game to partner on with Grand Gamers Guild at the time. So this was the perfect sort of confluence of things for us to have sort of an experienced publisher in the more adult strategy to partner with, and the perfect game, one that we love, one that we want to like do justice to and create a great new version of it, one that that could launch this new brand for ourselves. So that's sort of how Burnt Island Games came to be, because we had this perfect property that we wanted to release and that we wanted to do well and needed to be in a different brand than Kids Table. So Burnt Island Games was launched from there. And then since then, it has not only done the Endeavor line, but other adult strategy games of a similar weight and complexity as well.
We weren't actually sure that we were going to continue doing any other games with Burnt Island when we first did Endeavor. And then what's happened now is it's too much for Kids Table to release four games a year. There just isn't space for it. And I don't want to make that kind of space for it, because I think your games sort of start getting diluted once you release too many games.
Yeah.
And so we're just, you know, we're piggybacking on each other. So we'll do a Kids Table game.
Leapfrogging.
Yeah. Okay. Leapfrogging. So we'll do one Kids Table game, and then we'll do a Burnt Island game, and then go back to Kids Table and then Burnt Island. And
yeah.
So we get our four releases a year, but we do them from the separate companies, and it makes a lot more sense for us. And I think for the industry as a whole, it sits better.
Yeah. And it feels like we sort of refresh our interest in the, you know, oh, okay, it's time to do a Burnt Island one. Oh, okay, now it's time to do a Kids Table one. Like, going back and forth from label to label really sort of keeps it vital for us. It's a wildly different experience doing one or the other. And I feel like, I don't know, just refreshing and just more fun to go from one brand to the other instead of several in a row from the same one.
Well, they operate different headspaces, right?
So yes.
Different headspaces, different fan base.
All right. So maybe you've already answered this question. It's very possible. But what is your favorite game that you've published across both companies?
Interesting.
My favorite game. Oh, it's so hard because if I don't absolutely love a game, I can't publish it. It just is that way. And I think that every single one of our games has something really, really special attached to it. But
well, this is the what's your favorite child? Like, yeah, who's your like favorite child? I understand how impossible the question is, but that might make it fun.
But I am going to answer it. I think there's a very special place in my heart for Endeavor. For so many reasons. It's the reason that I became a gamer in the first place. That game blew me away 15 years ago or whatever, 11 years ago, whatever, how many years ago
it
was?
11. We looked 11
years
up.
Ago. Okay,
it's
we just 11. Looked it up. Okay, 11 years ago, the game blew me away. It really pulled me right into the whole world. And having published it myself has been like a dream come true for me. So I'm going to say that that's my favorite game, but I really do love all of our games in different ways for each of them, of course, but they're just all so wonderful, just like my children.
Yeah, for me, my favorite game of ours is always the next one. It's always the one that we're working on. It's always like right for real right now. My favorite game is Creature Comforts.
Of course.
Loving it.
That game is very, very special. Yeah. Also,
I'm so excited for it. It's fresh. It's exciting. It's fun to play. It's just like always. And often our game finally makes it to us. The manufactured version. Oh, well, hooray! We open it up. We look at all the pieces, and then like it's a long time before we play that game again.
It's true.
We've played it a million times in the development process, then we get the final thing and like, okay, put it on the shelf, time for the next one.
So
that's
true.
Right. So all right, let's talk about Creature Comforts then. So I have not connected and played it on Tabletop Simulator, Tabletopia, or wherever it is yet. It's gonna happen. I'm not gonna, you know, fossilist this game. It's not gonna happen. Okay. I'm gonna get there, but talk about Creature Comforts, talk about the game a little bit, and give people a little bit of sneak peek at what they're going to see when they go to the Kickstarter page, which everybody listening to this is going to do.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Definitely go. All right, so Creature Comforts is a game where we are all playing as sort of little families of forest critters trying to prepare our homes for the next winter. And we're like sort of anthropomorphized animal critters. We have tools and homes, and we're creating foods and clothing and lighting and stuff like that for the winter. The game is, I kid you not, the least conflicty game you've ever played in your life. Every interaction in the game that you have with another player is a nice one. Everything that you're doing when you get the opportunity to interact with somebody is friendly. Like, there's no taking anything from anyone. There's no hurting anyone in the slightest. It's also very nice. And what you're doing is, it's a worker placement game with no blocking. So every space is open to everybody. And in fact, placement happens all at the same time. So during the placement phase, everyone is just sort of placing wherever they want to on the board at the same time. Doesn't matter if other people are there. Just everything is free for you to go to. The interesting thing, the mechanical hook, I think, of the game is that wherever you go, you're going to have to use dice results in order to trigger a successful visit of wherever you went. And before you send your workers out, you roll your own two dice. So you have sort of a little hint at dice that you're going to have when you get there. But then after everyone is placed, we roll a pool of shared village dice that everyone is going to be using. So you have a little bit of information about your capabilities before you go. And then after you're in position, then we're going to roll and find out the total sum of your capabilities. And then once it's your turn, then you use your own two dice and the pool of village dice to make sort of a shared pool for yourself of dice that you then power your activities with, and everyone, in that way, everyone has a slightly different pool of dice that they're going to be working with. So you go out into the village, you do all the different things, you gain these resources, you gain more cards and so on, just pick up different things, and you're trying to get the stuff you need to craft comforts to last you the winter. Socks, quilts, candles, board games, whatever it is that you're making to make a nice winter for yourself. It's really neat. The game cycles through like the different seasons of the year. Different stuff is available at different times of the year. And by the end of the game, you've built up a nice combination of comforts that are going to work together. Like if you have a rocking chair, well, then you'll get extra points for also making a quilt. If you have a pot of tea, then you'll have extra points for also having a reading lamp, and just different stuff like that that all works together nicely. It's really fun. And the amazing thing, and you hit on this earlier, the amazing thing is that at the end of the game, you don't care if you won at all. All you've cared about the entire time is like, did I make cool stuff? Did I make cozy stuff? Is my den warm and friendly and full of joy by the end of it? It really, like, the delight of the game is what propels you the entire time. You want to get points, but you don't care if you have the most at the end. I've never played a game and felt like that at the end. That's so striking in this way where people don't care at all if they won.
I love that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really weird. Reiner Knizia said something recently. I don't know if he got it from somewhere else, but he said that in board games, winning is the goal, but it's not the winning that's important. It's the goal that is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in this, I think that this like epitomizes that, where it's not at all about winning. It's just about the experience of driving towards that win and creating like something that works in your own little tableau. So cool.
It's really been very interesting watching Josh as we develop this game, because when I first brought it to him, I saw this game from another Canadian designer.
What's her name?
Roberta Taylor is the designer. Sorry. So Roberta sent me this game, and it was in a different sort of theme world. And I was like, I loved it right away. And Josh was like, I don't know. I don't know if this is for us. And I sort of agreed at that point, let's send it back to Roberta and see what she can do with it. And she sent it back to us a couple of months later, and it became this beautiful cottage cozy game. And, you know, we played it together. We both really liked it. And then we played it again, and Josh loved it, and then loved it. And watching him through this whole process has been really amazing, because I was smitten, you know, from the first play. But Josh just has really come into loving this game so much.
Well, it's an interesting development challenge, because Roberta's sort of the baseline of creation for this game was that zero conflict. No one interacts negatively with each other. So every design decision, every development decision that I've been making along the way has been sort of to service that and to create little nooks and crannies in the game where you can help other players instead of hurt them. It's been fun and interesting, and what a fun design space to play around in. It's cool.
And it's gorgeous.
Oh yeah, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Gorgeous. It looks like a storybook. It's reminiscent of 70s and 80s, I think. And even just the look of it is so cozy.
Yeah, I saw, I don't even know where it was. It might have been in like the Board Game Reviewers media Facebook group or somewhere. I don't know. There was a big, long, protracted conversation about what 80s artist Creature Comforts reminded them of. Yeah, you know the exact conversation I'm talking about.
I do.
So, yeah, it really is a very, very cute and adorable game. And that actually brings me to another thing that I wanted to ask you about, because it sounds to me like it's a primary consideration in a lot of the kids' table board gaming stuff. James Hudson had posted something at some point in the last couple of weeks about specifically the mechanic of countering and how problematic and negative the explicit act of countering is in a game, where it's like, I've put this thing together, I'm going to do this thing. And of course, I was talking about Magic before, and you know, the deck I play is a counter burn deck, but I digress. And you mentioned like that is a mechanic that you very deliberately try to keep out of your games.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I don't want to watch anyone cry when they're playing our games. I get that there are games that have that, and you're specifically playing that game because that game has it, and that's fine. Sure. if you want to do that. But I always think of playing Crazy Eights where, you know, there's a reverse turn and there's a cancel turn and there's like all of these things where, what are we actually doing this for? We're just putting a pile of cards down and you're just telling me that I have to stop doing the thing that I'm doing. Well, I only have these cards in my hand and that's all I can play. And I don't feel like that needs to be part of a game where people are engaged. And we do specifically try to keep that stuff out of our games. It doesn't need, it can be in games, but I don't think that it needs to be in our games.
Yeah. Countering as just sort of the negation of someone else's turn doesn't feel good. You don't like it when it happens to you. You can have interaction between players, conflicty interaction between players without undoing what another player has done, without canceling their turn, without making them skip a turn and so on. Like you can have interactions where someone vanquishes someone else without that player feeling like they've wasted their time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's better to have a battle than to have that battle have never happened.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of our games have that. And in fact, I think we try as much as we can to have catch-up mechanisms in our game so players feel like they're as close as possible to winning. Mm-hmm. Everybody feels that way.
It's a good pun. Catch-up mechanism for a Food Fighters faction.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. Catch-up mechanism. Okay.
Yeah, we'll file that one away. Good ideas. All right. So let's talk about Fossilis. Sure. This is a game that I don't remember what happened. It just was not in the cards for me to kickstart it at the time. But like from the first, I think you probably remember, I like ran upstairs with my laptop because we had there was a little video in the Kickstarter video. I was like, look at this game. Look at what they do with the, it's so cool.
Nice. Andrew is a admirer of good industrial design.
Yes, I love industrial design. Like I went to Disney World with the kids and the kids were amazed about Disney World. And I was also amazed by Disney World in a completely different way.
Right.
So,
right.
So I just.
That's funny. We have our brother-in-law went to Disney World and he was just amazed with the logistics of Disney World.
Yes, like, totally. You know, yeah, like, listen, any major amusement park that builds tunnels just so that you don't have to see them rolling around in the trash, that's pretty awesome. It's, I don't know, it's amazing. Some of the stuff they do is absolutely amazing. But anyway, let's talk about Fossilis. Very cool what's going on with this game. I don't even know where this, I mean, it's not fulfilled yet. I have no idea where it is, so I'll throw it to you.
Well, like within the next month, everybody should have their game, which is amazing, and we're excited about it. And cool. You know, all the stuff that has
everyone
been...
Everyone should have their game?
Maybe not us, but the rest of the world will have their game, give or take a few days or a month or whatever. Originally, we were going to release it at Gen Con, which obviously also didn't really happen this year, but it was supposed to be a Gen Con release, and then China shut down for, you know, for like 2 months in the middle of all of this, and that's exactly how far behind we are. We're about 2 months behind with it. So by the end of November, almost everybody should have their games and we're really excited about it. Mm-hmm. And this also is to me, a very interesting story. Another Canadian designer, David Diaz, had this game or his prototype sitting on a table at
Proto-TO.
Proto-TO. It was a prototyping
mini convention
and you know it was mostly designers but some publishers came and you know there was a room full of designers who had their games on the table and anyway so I saw this thing and we had seen previous games of his and I asked him what it was and thought that was really cool. I happened to have my kids there with me and I said okay let's sit down and play this game and they played it for an hour. And this is like 2.5 years ago already. So I had a 6-year-old who sat there for an hour playing a game. And that to me at that moment, it's like, this is engaging and it's going to be something else when it's actually really made. He made it out of Lego first. The board was made out of Lego, which was really neat. And that's probably what drew us to it in the first place. But I could tell like the table presence that this thing would have. And the fact that my son was engaged for as long as he was playing this game and was very interested in doing well made me want to bring this home and show it to Josh. And so we played it together and it was like, there's no question in my mind, this must be our game. And then we had some really incredible people working on the art. Apolline Etienne did the art for it. And then Noah from Game Trays did the design of the board, which turned out to be very cool. So we've got this beautiful 3D board where essentially what you're trying to do is push around tiles, the terrain, to uncover dinosaur bones, and you're pulling them out as paleontologists and putting together these dinosaurs to display in your museum. And, you know, you're competing with the other paleontologists. You want to get the best dinosaurs. And just everything just fell into place. The game is gorgeous. It is so much fun to play. And it's really amazing how many people are excited about it.
Yeah. In our series of Kickstarter campaigns, we had sort of an escalating, like each campaign would do a predictable amount better than the last one. And we had like a good sort of arc that it was going on. And then Fossilis went like three or four times beyond expectations. Like just we're considering it an outlier because we don't want to like have it too high for the next one that we do. But it really, like the enthusiasm for it was off the charts. And a lot of it, like you were saying, has to do with sort of the engineering and the way that it just presented right off the bat, where it's like, oh, you take one look at this thing and immediately you're like, I know what this game is about. I know what we're doing in this game, and it looks like it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I want to put this into the hands of my six-year-old very badly. So, we're looking forward to picking that up when it's available.
I'm excited
for it. Okay.
So, speaking of kids, is it hard to balance game design and publishing with parenting?
No, you just ignore the kids. You just ignore the kids.
Actually,
and you balance the game.
Don't listen to him. What? It's the opposite to that. And in fact, it's really awesome to have them around because we, at least with the kids' table stuff, we use them all the time. We play our prototypes with them all the time. Yeah. And it really is telling for us if they're like 5 minutes into it and they're yawning, or they're on their feet and jumping up and down because they're so excited about the thing that they're going to do next. So we know for sure we have a good game if they're excited about it. And at times, both of our children are interested in doing development with us, which is really exciting.
Yeah, I'm working on a game with both of them right now, like from scratch, designing, developing a new game. Very cool. It's been going really well. But as far as balancing it, I think our kids sometimes tire of being playtesters.
Yeah.
Like, ugh, they'd rather like be playing Among Us right now, or Fortnite,
although,
or something. Like,
well, every child right now would rather be playing Among Us. That's true.
But I think that really comes from them having played the game 30 times already.
Yeah, that's true. One of our sons has lower patience for developing. He wants to play the game when it's ready. He doesn't want to play it so that we'll stop midstream and be like, well, what do you think about 3 points instead of 2 points? Like he is sure. Annoyed at that and doesn't want, because he wants
to. I understand.
Yeah, because like oftentimes he feels like we're trying to rob him of the points he just rightfully earned. we're gonna nerf that thing that you just did well at because it's overpowered and it's like unfair to him that doesn't want to have to deal with that.
Well, kids are remarkably good at not hiding anything.
Yes.
You know exactly what they're thinking.
Yeah.
Unless it's homework. That don't hide.
All right. Let's talk about a couple more games. Sure. So Josh, you did the art for the Kringle Caper?
Not much of it, actually. Jonathan Chaffer did most of the cards for the game. I only did the box cover for Kringle Caper.
Oh, okay.
That's a Grand Gamers Guild game. It's an 18 card, not a room escape exactly, but sort of put together like a room escape.
Puzzle solving.
Yeah, you're trying to solve a crime. It's very simple. It's basically any number of players, but I think it probably works best with not too many players, where you're just trying to solve a Christmas-themed crime using clues on the cards. So I did the cover for that and some of the graphic design, but mostly it was Jonathan Chaffer, the designer of the game, that did all of the visuals and layout on the cards themselves.
Yeah, we got a chance to play that a couple weeks ago.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd highly recommending that to folks to pre-order it now from Grand Gamers Guild and get it in time for Christmas, because especially with needing to cut back on certain kinds of larger family get-togethers, whatever,
right.
This is a really cool way to bring some different kind of fun into your Christmas day.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. It's cool. People can definitely have just like a 40 minutes, something like that, of a figuring something out together, which I enjoy. Figuring stuff out.
You do.
Yeah, we got the five of us, the family around the table, and our six-year-old was in and out. But
it's what he does. Yeah,
it's what he does. That's true. All right, so let's wrap it up with talking about In Too Deep.
In Too Deep is an awesome game that I first came up with like 15 years ago, for real.
Okay, actually.
Not one of these 2009 15 years ago that are so popular. came up with the basic idea for this game, which the mechanical theory of the game is that all of us players are trying to solve sort of puzzles on a game board with a shared set of pieces. So none of us controls any pieces in particular, like these aren't my pieces and those are yours, but we are all manipulating the same elements on the board in order to satisfy a puzzle. And that was the basic idea of the game at first. It had sort of a spy theme on it. Then my friend and colleague Daryl Chow noticed the game at a game design meetup, really enjoyed it, and the two of us started working together on it or refined it further. And eventually what it became was In Too Deep. And In Too Deep is a game where it's sort of set in the future. And there is an evil organization called the Syndicate that's trying to take over this city using cyber-enhanced criminals. And we are an organization devoted to taking down the Syndicate and preventing them from succeeding. And we figured out that we can hack into the minds of these criminals and control them. And the reason that we want to hack into their minds and control them is so that we can get the evidence we need to bring down the Syndicate. So during the game, we're going to be gaining control of these various criminals. And again, all of us are going to sort of be swapping and trading control over the different criminals. And we're going to be using them to commit crimes around the city. As we're committing crimes around the city, or putting the criminals in positions to commit crimes around the city, we're going to be sort of scraping evidence and intel out of their activities when they're doing so. Now, this is all towards a greater good. We want to foil the Syndicate's plot by the end of it, but it's going to be troubling to our psyche as we go. So during the game, as you're doing stuff, you can choose whether to do it bad or worse or not so bad. You know, you can choose your approach as you're having these crimes be committed. So the worse you act, the worse you behave during the game, the more dilemmas you pick up, the more corruption that you risk over the course of the game. So you can sort of play it safe and not be so corrupt by the end of the game, or you can try to push it and you gain more corruption. And so in addition to the puzzle on the game board, there's also this aspect of corruption and morality that you're trying to balance during the game. And the way that it factors in is at the end of the game, the player who is most corrupt has gone in too deep, and that player will get a huge scoring penalty if, as a group, we've managed to foil the plot. So by the end of the game, one of us is in too deep and doesn't want the team to have foiled the plot. The thing is, you never know who that's going to be by the end of the game. The corruption levels are kind of semi-secret from each other. So it creates a weird tension around the board where I think I might be the one that's in too deep, so maybe I don't want to contribute to foiling the plot, or I think I'm definitely not the one that's gone in too deep, so I want to push as much evidence in as I can. There's a really cool morality, sort of semi-deduction and sort of group table think that goes around over the game that lingers over and hovers over the whole experience. It's a lot of fun.
That sounds really, really, it's almost like a hidden traitor mechanic, except it's hidden from everybody.
Yeah, that's sort of one of the taglines we used during the Kickstarter campaign was, one of you will betray us, you just don't know it yet.
Right.
And that's sort of like an emergent traitor mechanism.
Yeah.
That is very, very cool.
Very cool.
Sounds like that game relies a lot on everything that happens in between the rules in terms of the social engagement around the table. It's not so much a social deduction game, but it sounds like that social experience adds a lot to the flavor of what's happening while you're playing.
It absolutely does, because the mechanical element is very stable, like the solving of the puzzle and the moving around of stuff to try to sort of put all the pieces in place to accomplish your crimes is one thing. But then that sort of psychological element on top of it really flavors everything. And the table, the way that the people around the table are behaving influences everyone else around the table. So if Helena is being very corrupt during a game and just like, I'm going to push it with every crime I do, well, all of a sudden that gives license for everyone else around the table to sort of up their level of corruption without risking being the one that goes in too deep. Yeah. So it's sort of contagious, that behavior around the table. And there are different ways to benefit or get risk penalties from being too high or too low on that scale of corruption.
One of the things that I find very interesting is you can just sit and watch the game and be completely entertained by it. You don't have to play it to love the game. It's really, really cool. Very innovative.
Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, true.
Yeah, it was a bit hard to explain. That was one of the drawbacks from the publishing angle is it does have some sort of innovative aspects to it that were a mouthful to explain to people. I mean, I just had tried to explain the game to you guys and it took me a couple of minutes there. So it was a challenge for us to communicate what it is that is special about this game and easily and how it works.
So what's the player count on In Too Deep?
Player count is 1 to 5.
1 to 5. How do you play this? It must have a completely different variant for solo.
We've developed what we call the Echo system, which is like an automa that functions as an opponent during the game.
You can also use it in a two-player game.
Yeah, you can bring that. You can bring Echo into a multiplayer game as well and have sort of as a wild card playing against you.
Well, hopefully by the time In Too Deep fulfills, the government will allow 5 people to sit around a table again.
Yeah. That's the hope. Yes. That's the hope.
Yes.
Otherwise, we're going to have to get really creative with how we play this game. So.
All right. So we've been talking a lot about a lot of games. I have one last question. I was going to say, what are your favorite games to play with your kids? But I'm actually going to turn around and say, what do you think your kids' favorite games are to play with you?
There is a lot of Dominion requested.
Hmm.
They both enjoy it, and I think it's because they're both very interested in doing more than one thing on your turn when you've been able collect enough cards. They like to be able to do that. We've been playing Food Fighters a lot lately, actually. It always comes back in large chunks of time. So recently we've been playing tournament style, and they've been enjoying that. And like I was saying earlier, they've been choosing to play Order of Invention. That's been a game that they've asked for often in the last little while, which is nice. It's funny because I mentioned this to you before, but they have no clue about the timeline. So it's really funny watching them bet on the different things, and it blows their mind when the air conditioner was invented in 1906.
Don't spoil the game.
Oh shoot! The game.
That's all right.
Well, we got to rip that one card. Now we've turned Order of Invention into a legacy game. Awesome.
No, actually, this is what I've told people about Order of Invention before. Even knowing when one or two things were invented doesn't help you because it's in comparison to the other 3 cards that come out.
It's still helpful.
I mean, it's not unhelpful, but it's not as helpful as you would think because you need to have a really good grasp on all the different inventions to fit them together.
And it's really amazing sometimes, like, 3 cards will come out. That's 1904, 1905, and 1906. And
yes, I know!
How are you going to get that?
Right? Well, you know, I did last night.
So luck.
No, that wasn't luck.
No.
No, I didn't know. It's true. I didn't actually know. But it just, in my mind, made sense to me, and it worked out. So I don't care. I won.
Good enough.
I wonder what the kids would say their favorite game is.
They
love this summer.
Oh my God. This summer we played Bonanza.
It was the summer of Bonanza. It was a real.
So, okay, Josh.
I saw the gears going.
Yeah, I stopped myself.
He did. That doesn't usually happen.
Rare.
Yes.
Yeah.
We played so much Bonanza over the summer. So very much. But I think we played so much of it that I think it's done. We're done with the game. The thing that they really want to play the most right now is the game that they're designing with Josh, which is really cool. It's a really interesting game, but it's so nice to see our kids interested in the thing that we do and wanting to do it themselves and then actually enjoying making it and playing it.
Yeah, every day at breakfast we work on it.
It's awesome. Really cool.
Yeah.
All right, so that'll be on Kickstarter in 2021?
I don't know. It might not even be for us.
I don't actually think that it's going to be a kids' table game.
Oh, wow.
Well, I think we've kept you long enough. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Helena and Josh. Where can people find you online if they want to find out more about all of the things that you're doing?
Well, we have a Kids Table website. It's kidstablebg.com. You can find all of our games there and links to all of our socials. We are Kids Table Board Gaming on Facebook and at Kids Table BG on Instagram and Twitter. And if you want to find our strategy games for adults, you can find us at burntislandgames.com and Burnt Island at Twitter and Instagram and Burnt Island Games on Facebook. That's a lot.
That's all right. You're doing a lot.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And we will actually have a link to that Creature Comforts Kickstarter page. Well, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as well, except we are at FamilyGamersAA, or you can go to the Facebook community.
Easiest way to get there is go to thefamilygamers.com/community. If you don't like this whole newfangled social media thing,
Andrew at thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra at thefamilygamers.com.
Please don't forget to subscribe to the show, tell your friends about the show, and leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find us on TuneIn or Stitcher or Spotify or Amazon Music.
Last but not least, The Family Gamers is sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points.
All right, and I think that's going to be it. Thank you again, Helena and Josh, for coming on the show. It's been a barrel of laughs. I think especially in these COVID times, we need the laughter more than I could possibly say. So thanks so much for coming on and just having a great evening together.
Thank you guys so much. That was really a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right, so that's it for us this week, dear.
All right, until next time. Play games.